Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One,
Spotify,
and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the MIP.
Yeah!
The Michael Irvin Podcast.
You knew this was coming.
Guess who? Who started this thing off?
Join me every week for the Michael Irvin Podcast. We'll give you the full MIP experience. I'm talking everything from football to fashion. I will be chopping it up with playmakers, headline makers, and I am throwing haymakers. I'm the MVP of the MIP. Don't miss it.
Download new episodes of the MIP, the Michael Irvin Podcast, every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify.
Welcome to Real Jam Radio. I am Daniel Wu, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. My guest is Dan Feldman of NBC's Pro Basketball Talk, a great person to talk with everything that's going on, especially the coming offseason and draft, and one of our compatriots for the mock offseason with Dunked On, which is coming soonish. So we had a great conversation. I hope you really enjoy it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
It's funny. You and I have both spent a lot of time thinking and kind of framing this coming offseason. And for me, it's sort of impossible to frame it without 2021. You have COVID and everything else that's going on, but just because a lot of the big decisions that have to be made this year, really, you know, it's because of the ripple effects next year with this loaded free agency class that's coming and hopefully more financial certainty for the league, whatever that certainty ends up being. And I was wondering if you're having the same problem.
I don't know. It's not that long ago that we had free agent classes that just weren't that big of a deal. I mean, this one is the first one in a while, but it's not that rare. Like, we're kind of in this era where the cap has increased so much year over year. Not every single year, but enough years where this feels very strange, but it's happened plenty of times before.
Yeah, and it's also what happens when guys start taking slightly longer contracts again, and it's just the sequencing of how things can happen. And so, you know, there isn't a Kawhi or Giannis or anything in this class. There are a lot of big decisions to make, but kind of on that 2021 idea, something that I've been working on a piece for The Athletic that's not yet out. It'll probably come out next week, assuming I can get my brain around it right, which is basically what I'm kind of getting at for, let's say I'll use a team like Dallas, is trying to reconcile optimism, pessimism, and realism when it comes to 2021. So Dallas, they don't have really more than the mid-level exception to use this year. But spending it on a multi-season contract makes it harder for them to make a big splash in 21. And so what I've been, kind of the way that I've been thinking about it is, well, if you're a Dallas optimist, you're like, well, we don't want to make it harder for ourselves to get somebody great if somebody great wants to come. But spending that money and getting somebody good could also make you better and then make it more likely that somebody would actually be interested in joining you.
Now, you don't want to become too good, because look at the backlash Kevin Durant got for going to the Warriors. You got to be careful. You don't want to be too good right the year before. The team that hits the absolute sweet spot is the Heat, right? They had their good run in the right year. Maybe they take a small step back next year. Maybe that makes them even more appealing to free agents because they've already made the strong impression.
Yeah, I think there's also, I mean, so it's an interesting question of kind of where it goes from here because of Durant, because yes, he did face this backlash, but he also, to an extent, got what he wanted out of it. And as long as you're okay with that backlash, as long as you can deal with it, I mean, he got two championships. Now he, you know, and unfortunately, the Achilles injury happened. We lost last year, and sucks for him in so many ways. But I think that the effect of Kevin Durant, sort of paralleling, and this makes sense thematically, LeBron in 2010, is that there will always be a degree of rancor and skepticism and all that. And LeBron wiped all of that away by winning in Cleveland, and then, of course, I guess, helped it with LA, not that there was any stuff to do. But also, like, it's not the worst thing in the world, because it's not like it's going to be on his Hall of Fame plaque or something.
No, but I just think for other free agents, you know, going ahead, if they're looking back on the Durant situation, I don't know if that's such a positive model to them, because that backlash was so loud. I mean, it was just so universal. And yet Durant experienced the winning, but I'm not sure future free agents are quite going to appreciate that as much, because they're not the ones who experienced the bright side, but they darn sure heard about the downside of, oh, you know, you took the easy way out and all of that.
Well, and the other part that I think could be the cautionary tale from Durant, and Ethan Sherwood-Strauss's book talks about this well, is I think there was a part of Durant, maybe even more than a part, that hoped and expected that the Warriors fan base would embrace him with open arms. And I think to an extent they did. But what I could imagine being frustrating is, I mean, he was an unbelievable player and was such a huge part of those two championship teams, and potentially could have been for a third were it not for the injuries. But he wasn't loved the same way that the established guys, the people who were there from when they were drafted, who kind of were a part of building that team from the ashes that they were. And that's something I know a little bit about. and I think that there was definitely a sentiment, and I think it's well-founded. I'm not criticizing Durant for this in the slightest, that he wasn't embraced in the same way. And it's a different kind of thing. You know, like, and I'm not saying that the Warriors fans were bad about it or that there was any ill will. It's just that, you know, that kind of passion, that kind of fandom, that kind of love is fundamentally different.
Well, I think that gets back to what I'm saying. The number one reason why that happened is because Steph Curry especially, but Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, they won a championship before Durant got there. It wasn't just that those guys helped the team gain relevancy and then Durant put them over the top. They were already at the top. And so that's where I think, like, you don't want to be too good. If a free agent joins Dallas or this version of Miami now, like, I think their fans would generally like view that player, accept that player more so because he's helping putting them over the top. They didn't already have that, you know, elite championship success before.
Yeah, I think that might be the real difference, is that, you know, the we did it without you. I kind of an idea. And yes, Kevin Durant was miles better than Harrison Barnes, and we don't know how that Warriors team would have gone after 73-9 if they had largely kept it together, if they would have even done that, which I'm not totally sure of. But it is a really good point, and that is a difference. And so you have this group. I mean, it's a really fascinating kind of looking forward. I've written before about what I call the siren song of 2021, which is this idea that there's an extremely strong group of free agents, but there's also an extremely strong reason for all of them to stay where they are. And so it isn't a circumstance like some that we've seen in the past, though I would say most in the modern era aren't really like this, where it doesn't seem like, maybe Dwight Howard in Orlando is an example of that. He got traded. Or maybe you could even argue Dwight Howard with the Lakers the first time was one of those, where it's like, probably doesn't want to stay, but is a really good player. So you know that, like, it's a narrower field. But, like, the Clippers with Kawhi and Paul George, they each in certain ways made a choice to be there recently. And I mean, you could go through various other members of this class, and really, I guess you could make the argument that Giannis, if he ends up being a part of it, if he doesn't extend, is really the only guy who hasn't wielded that sort of control. And so that makes it really hard. But all of those teams have a really good reason to keep their guys. I mean, the Lakers with LeBron is another prototypical example of that.
Yes, and I'll just add to that. I think we always overrate future free agent classes. Free agent classes always look better this far out, and then things change, right? It's often the players that people are real excited about, they tend to be older, right? That's, you have to be a unrestricted free agent, and so there's more they're more prone to dropping off than other players who are going to be unrestricted free agents are from joining that star class. Some guys sign extensions. You know, some guys come into a situation like you're talking about where it's very clear they're going to stay. Like, if the Lakers win a championship next year, like, LeBron's not leaving. And I suppose that right now, though, you could say, well, you could see a situation where the Lakers fall off and he wants to do something as narrative. I don't know. But you can at least imagine him leaving. If they win a championship, like, he's not leaving. And so things will change. The free agent classes almost always get worse.
Yeah, there's a kind of a parallel to the idea for me is, like, there are more reasons that a team can go under their over-under projection than they can go over. And I mean, there's a big parallel between those two, and that's injuries. And I mean, Oladipo is an amazing example of that. I mean, looking back a few years ago, I mean, at first it was like, okay, Oladipo's really overpaid and all that, and then he gets to Indiana and then he has that star turn. Like, oh my God, like if he doesn't get an extension, he's going to be, could be one of the biggest stars of the 2021 free agent class. Not necessarily at the like Paul George LeBron level. And now we're less than a year out and I don't know what to expect.
Yeah, I mean, that's an especially tough one. I don't either. I mean, he's also fits in the category of he could sign an extension. You know, he could be off the market. It wouldn't shock me if he and the Pacers agree to an extension, or he and a different team agree to an extension, really.
Yeah, and so that's kind of the other branch of optimism, pessimism, realism that I think is really compelling with this class. And this is something that I don't know how much we'll deal with it in the mock off season, but it's something, you know, off season previews, the kind of stuff that we both do, is I like thinking about this with those kind of second tier guys like Oladipo and Drew Holiday, which is the challenge that their front offices face in terms of how to reconcile where they are. And Oladipo in certain ways is even more complicated because of the equity he has with the franchise and the idea that they didn't get to see their team together at full strength last year because of everything that happened with the Pacers, and now they have a new head coach. And so, yes, if Kevin Pritchard is risk averse and if, or if Oladipo has told them something to change the thought process, like maybe like, hey, for whatever reason, like maybe I'm not planning on it, or like I'm straight up, I'm not going to resign, then maybe you go in that direction. But at the same point, it's very easy to say, I want to see how this works. And yes, there's a chance it goes badly and we get nothing for him. But at the same point, it's like you kind of want to know.
Right. I think it's a common mistake that teams make is being risk averse, as if choosing to keep the status quo is not also a choice. Like one way or the other, you're forced into a choice here. You got to make what you think the best one is. You know, yeah, it's a little riskier to extend him, or I understand that, but keeping him and just hoping for the best, that's also risky. Like, there's no way around it. You're going to have to face some risk here, so you just might as well decide what you think is best. And that's a real tough one to evaluate from outside specifically. I mean, there's always things that we don't know from afar. But in that one, the medical issues, right, I got to imagine the Pacers have a better grasp on that. Ideally for them, they would have a better grasp on what his future plans are, what he wants, like what it would take to keep him to stay. Or I guess if you are the Pacers front office and you don't know what he wants, if he won't tell you, if he won't communicate to you what he wants, that should be telling also.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other huge variable that is sometimes eventually public, but very rarely in the moment, is what kind of offers are you getting? Like, Nate and I have gotten into this a fair amount with Oladipo of, if you are another team, like we can go back to the Dallas well, how much are you giving up for a player who, yes, is extension eligible, but then you have to deal with the extended trade rules then? I'm not sure how huge a deal that is for Oladipo in particular. But, you know, like he's an unrestricted free agent. He can leave of his own volition, even if you have kind of an understanding of where things are going. But also, if, like, again, the idea of optimism. If Dallas thinks they might be in the Giannis Derby, are they really going to give up much of value to get Victor Oladipo now? And then basically just kind of like largely pen themselves in? Now, they wouldn't necessarily have to if they don't extend him. But who's going to give up a trove for Victor Oladipo or Drew Holiday if they're optimistic that they can get them next year? And maybe that optimism is poorly founded, and maybe some teams aren't optimistic. Maybe we get the Toronto Raptors Kawhi Leonard situation where it's like, hey, we'd get them now and convince them to come rather than hoping and expecting they'll come next year.
Well, let's stick with Oladipo for a second before getting to Drew, because I think he's such an interesting case. He can sign an extension with the Pacers that would be worth almost $113 million over 4 years. I guess my two-part question is, you know, if you were the Pacers, would you offer him that much? For perspective, his max in unrestricted free agency would be $131 million, so far more than that $113 million over 4 years, and that's with a flat salary cap and with him going to a new team. So there's definitely a lot of ways that could be even more than $131 million, but that seems to me kind of like the minimum realistic number in free agency. Would you offer him that $113 million over 4 years on an extension? If you're Oladipo, how open would you be to signing it?
I would not offer it right now as the Pacers, because he just didn't look like the same guy when we've been able to see Oladipo. And quad injuries scare the crap out of me. Like, I've gone before that, like, you know, Achilles are the big one for me that it still really, really scares me. And I need to see full proof of health before I get there. And the Oladipo, even towards the end of the 1920 season that we saw, like, that wasn't the same guy. And to commit that kind of money a year early is, now maybe if you could do it for a year or two and just, you know, kind of like hedge your bets a little bit, I might be a little bit more open to it. But no, I wouldn't do it. Would you?
With what I know, no. I mean, look, if he gets back to form where he was pre-injury, you got a bargain. But no, I wouldn't. If you were Oladipo, though, I mean, it's tough to put ourselves in that exact mindset. But would you just take that and say, hey, you know, I can lock in all this money? Or would you gamble that somebody will give you closer to the max in free agency?
I wouldn't do it. But I think the primary reason why is not money. It's control. Like this, this is the whole like the whole Giannis thing. And yes, Oladipo and Giannis aren't the same guy. But when you agree to an extension, and Oladipo, he'll be 29 when he hits free agency, assuming he does in 21, you're conceding the rest of your prime, where you're playing, is totally controlled by people that are not you. And he's, you know, he hasn't made like an ungodly amount of money, but he's made plenty. Like, you know, like he's not going to be suffering at this point. And if he wants, I will never criticize a player for maximizing their financial stuff. Like, this goes back to the whole Carmelo thing for me. It's like, I'll never criticize them for that, but I will if they do that and then complain about losing or something else. You know, like get into those where you can't complain about not having your cake and eating it too, but you can anyway. And so with Oladipo, the way that you make that commitment is if you're happy with that circumstance, if you're happy ceding that control. And the Pacers, it's not the worst place to be. I mean, they're a consistently competitive team. I think that they generally have a good front office. They've done reasonably well with coaches, and we'll see how Nate Bjorkgren works out. But I wouldn't expect them to be a championship contender anytime soon. I mean, Oladipo has chosen the state of Indiana before for college, but like, I don't know if there's something else that he values. Maybe that has changed over the course of his adult life. And so for me, it is more of that. Like, if you want anything other than what you have, or think that you could, then I would wait to see how it works out. And it's true. He could end up losing a ton of money in that deal. And if that's what's important to him, by all means, you could take it. But the idea that a Dallas or a Miami comes calling and potentially you can elevate them into the championship level, you can play with really great players, you could, and maybe especially when you think about those two franchises, but I mean, you could go somewhere else too, that they've generally been creative front offices and that they could be better around you. Whereas I think we kind of know what the Pacers would be if Oladipo resigns.
And look, if you want the money, you can always go to the Knicks in free agency. Like, you can be the man and still can get your money.
Oh God, if they sign Oladipo with RJ Barrett and Oladipo's not the same guy.
Ooh.
Oh man.
I mean, it would be very Knicks to end up with him if he's not the same guy. I mean, we see this the same way, which is interesting. Just the idea that, no, the Pacers probably shouldn't offer that extension, and Oladipo probably wouldn't sign it. And so you're a stalemate. You know who I love as an Oladipo destination, though? I think it makes so much sense as a Lakers trade. You know, maybe they can get just enough to get him because they're already expensive. It's going to be tough to add to this core. But hey, this is your shot to add another star. If Oladipo doesn't work out, you know, look it. I think we just saw that LeBron Anthony Davis with decent role players, with enough role players who step up, can be enough. Like, they didn't have a dependable third player. They had a different guy at different times who was good enough. But Oladipo could be that third star. Like, the opportunity to get him, give up Kyle Kuzma, give up maybe that, you know, distant first rounder that they can trade. And if it goes south, well, you can pivot into 2021 cap space and see what you can do there. Like, to me, an Oladipo Lakers trade is just very intriguing for both sides.
The idea of the downside there, I think, is really fascinating because the Lakers can make it work. You know, I'm sure Lakers are people who don't like Danny Green would just say, hey, they already played with like a ghost at that position anyway last year. And
I like Danny Green. I've always been very high on him, and I almost feel that way a little bit.
And so I think then, so from the Lakers' perspective, yeah, I think it's a worthy gamble. Also, the Lakers are so asset poor at the moment that it's hard to think of how they could really overpay. And Kuzma, you know, he's 1 year away from restricted free agency. He's extension eligible. So that I think he's a poor fit with their foundational pieces. Also worth noting, not the same state, but Talen Horton Tucker is from went to Iowa State, and so maybe that is maybe there's some appeal there. I also liked the little bit of THT that we got to see, and you know, Indiana, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for them to just add a little rotational depth on the wing. But
Danny, the coastal bias right now. Oh, Iowa, Indiana, whatever. Like, you'd appreciate going back to the Midwest. It's all the same. I gotta tell you,
I never said it's all the same. I said they're geographically close.
I mean, they're not the farthest or anything, but what a California comment.
Fair enough.
Iowa, Indiana. Eh.
Yeah. I will take my medicine there. That is completely fair.
You
know,
you people who live near LA, I'll tell you.
Yeah. And he's also, should I have said, because he's from Chicago? He's from Chicago, which is closer. I mean, it's
getting
close to Gary,
warmer,
but yeah, they're to Gary.
Yeah,
but it's like, but it's like, I mean, it's interesting. Like with Oladipo, also, so like for the Lakers, I think they could have the confidence that he would want to come back there. Is so like, yeah, you get to some of those teams, like, okay, do we want to commit to him now? How sure are we going to come? And a lot of that can happen behind closed doors. It can be, you know, those sorts of like agent-y conversations. And in Oladipo's case, that's not tampering, because he's already, like, you're not trying to, in my opinion, you're not interfering with a contract at all. You're just trying to see how he's feeling about things. It's not, you're not trying to get a free agent. Now, you might disagree with that, but, you know, like, as long as it's not like, hey, you force a trade, because he can't force a trade to them. I mean, Anthony Davis is probably the closest we've ever come to that specific situation, but I'm interested in his future. And there's another interesting kind of shooting guard one that's come up a lot, is like, and I'm not comparing the two as players at all, but there's this like growing kind of sentiment that Buddy Hield is not long for Sacramento. But I also have zero idea what in the world a Buddy Hield trade would look like and who would be potentially interested. And so it might be one of those just like awkward circumstances where he's on the team because you can't figure out another way to do it, especially with the new look front office there. So it's not going to be the same situation of like, oh, we'll do a bad trade just to get off of him. I don't think it's going to be that.
No, I mean, I think this is something people overlook a lot. A new front office, like, they want to keep their jobs. They're not going to get it. If they're just like, we can't do anything with Buddy Hield, like, he's on this contract that's not ideal, like, we don't want to just dump him, like, we can't do anything, that basically buys them a year, because they're not the ones who signed him to the contract, and they can just, like, push out a decision on an evaluation of the front office's capabilities. I also think Buddy Hield, a lot of fans, some of these trade ideas I see, I think people are sleeping on him too much. Like, yeah, he had a down year. He was not as good as expected. His contract does look too expensive, but he can fit in anywhere. I mean, a guy who shoots like that, who plays with his energy, at least offensively, he's a real easy fit. A lot of teams would love to have somebody like Buddy Hield, and plenty of teams have the contracts to cobble together to put something together as far as matching salaries. I'm not saying he's like the most in-demand player in a trade, but I got to think that the Kings could get a nice positive return for him.
It certainly appears that you're more of a Hield optimist than me, but I get the idea. I think of Hield, I think that my criticisms of him as a, like, the player plus contract is the problem, not necessarily player. I agree with you that he could fit a lot of different places, and while he's not a good defender, he plays a position where defense is not paramount. So you could deal with that. Like, you can deal with a guy who can shoot the lights out and not defend at the two. That's okay. Like, you're probably not going to win. You know, it's hard maybe sometimes to win a championship that way, but not that many teams are winning a championship every year. 29 teams aren't. And, and probably, honestly, like 23 or 24 don't have a particularly good chance when the season starts. And I think that Oladipo is also, to me, really striking. Another idea that's been floating around in my head is, you could, and this is both an off-season thing and also an in-season because we have so many expiring contracts. Like, I've used San Antonio as an example here before. Like, you think about one of the most common trade structures in the NBA is player with expiring contract traded for player with longer contract, and then if it's a positive or a negative, you know, assets going one way or the other. And Buddy Hield, like, in many circumstances, could be a natural fit for a lot of those structures because, you know, like, he's making $24 million, I think, about a year. And if there's a team that's not really a free agent destination, especially if they're looking beyond next season and then his contract declines, which was a good piece of business for Vlade Divac, though he shouldn't have signed the extension in the first place, I think that there could be something like that. And I think that the challenge, though, will be what teams kind of decide that is the right path for them. So it's, again, this kind of goes to the idea of optimism, pessimism, realism. Is not only do you think you're going to be a free agent destination, but like, do you think you can do better than Hield? And Harrison Barnes, I think, is honestly in that camp, especially with the kind of the weird log jams that the Kings have, where they don't have like a ton of good players, but they have a lot of players that overlap with one another. So I don't know exactly how that squares up, but I think that you might be right that there's something that comes from it either now or at the deadline.
To me, if I'm the Kings, the near ideal trade for Buddy Hield is I'm looking for a bad contract. So I'm going to get value for Hield's on-court ability, and I'm going to get value for taking on that bad contract. That's a real easy match because I'm sending out Hield's big salary. You know, somebody like Al Horford, right? I don't know what the 76ers would send to entice Sacramento. Like, I think Al Horford's a pretty clearly negative value contract at this point. But, you know, I'd take on Al Horford, give up Buddy Hield, and get some real nice assets if something like that can be on the table.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that, for me, what makes Horford's contract more palatable, I think Hield's contract is worse than Horford's, but the reason why is because Horford's is so much shorter and less overall money. Like, I think you could be very right that over the course of their contracts, Hield is better, but if you could get out, like, it sort of gets along with the premise, is that if you think Buddy Hield is a positive value contract, then having more Buddy Hield contract isn't as bad of a deal.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's necessarily positive value, but for a team like Philadelphia, that's capped out anyway. Like, I'd rather have Hield than Horford.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And then you could also, like, I mean, I've thought about this for various teams. Philly's a good example of that. There's also value for ownership of getting somebody who maybe they make more in the future, but they make less money right now. And so you can lower the tax burden. Like, the Warriors might be in that situation with somebody like, I mean, maybe not Wiggins this year, but at some point in the future. Brooklyn could be at that juncture at some point. I think LeVert's a positive value contract, but maybe with Torian Prince. Like, maybe Torian Prince, you get somebody who's making like $7 million a year, but they have a little bit longer contract. That's a huge set of savings for the Nets. And the other team's like, okay, you know, we can make that work.
That'd be a little more palatable if Torian Prince were better. Not a great
year. A lot of things would be more palatable for the Nets if Torian Prince were better.
But to your point, like, that is a very tradable salary in a lot of different ways. That is one of them. And to some degree, I think they signed that extension just to have the salary on the books to be able to maneuver.
Well, and thank you for bringing up the salary on the books to be able to maneuver, because I think the most fascinating idea of that, and I'm not necessarily saying it's true, I haven't talked with anybody involved, is that was my theory with D'Angelo Russell and the Warriors originally. Not with the Timberwolves. They pretty clearly wanted him. And I think we're going to get a much clearer sense over the next, let's call it 5 weeks, of what the theory was behind the Warriors, all their machinations over the last year plus. Because they, you know, the D'Angelo Russell acquisition, while I disagreed with it, it was justifiable from their perspective for a couple of different reasons, and one of them was like having this matching salary. They ended up moving him for Andrew Wiggins, and you could argue the best traded pick obligation beyond this season with the Timberwolves pick next year, which I would argue that by virtue of them getting the number one pick, if they actually draft and play that player, that makes it more likely that they're going to be bad, because most rookies are negative players. And so that makes the pick more valuable. But so did they do all of this primarily as kind of salary ballast to have somebody for a, you know, a big money trade? Or did they do it because they thought D'Angelo Russell was going to help, primarily because he was going to help them, and then Andrew Wiggins kind of checks that same box conceptually?
Yeah, my take on it was similar to you, that hey, there's some salary here. And I think they hoped it would be attached to a more positive value player than Russell came out to be. But I think the idea was, this is our chance to build up our salaries. And I wonder, though, how much are we going to see the theory, especially with the Andre Iguodala trade exception? Don't you think that's less likely to get used because of the economic times we're in?
Absolutely. I mean, it, especially if it looks like they're not going to be getting the revenue of people being in Chase Center. Like, you own the building, that's great. But if you own the building and nobody's allowed to go inside, it's a little bit less great. And they, you know, and it's also a question of who is available for that, you know, and I think the maybe the most interesting identity question of the entire 2020 offseason is not where do the Warriors think they are in the timetable of contention. That's a term I've used basically of how wide is the window, you know, like how many years down the line is the window conceptually open, but how wide is the window right now? Do they think that last year was a total anomaly and if everybody is back to 100%, then it all fits together and they'll be fine? But also remember, they lost Kevin Durant. Like, this isn't the same team that you could argue would have been the favorites, probably would have won the 2019 championship if they had been healthy. And if the closer they are to that confident stance, the more likely they are to use it, even if it ends up being really expensive, because you are willing to bite that sort of a bill to have a real championship contender. But what I'm most interested in is if they're wrong. So if they're optimistic and they're wrong, then that team is insanely expensive. And maybe they're a second round exit, maybe a conference finals. And that's not even like a shame. There's just a bunch of talent in the Western Conference that is concentrated a lot in top teams. And they, you know, the wing defense is going to be a fundamental challenge for the Warriors this year. Their depth is really not at the same level that it was before, with, you know, Livingston retiring and Andre Iguodala in a different team and everything else. And so I think that they're, especially when you consider that the passage of time was not helpful to their star players, even if we were ignoring the injury stuff, that they're probably tier two. And if they're tier two, and I don't think that getting a $15 million player is going to push them to tier one.
Steph Curry is 32. Draymond Green is 30. Klay Thompson is 30. I would agree they're a tier two team. I also think the window is right now.
Agreed.
Tier two teams win championships all the time. Like, that's not the worst place to be. A tier two team, maybe even a tier three team, made the finals.
Yeah, and could have won the championship potentially if they had stayed healthier.
Right. I mean, to me, the window is right now, and you know. Sure, I would be happy to spend the Warriors owners' money. Like, yeah, it might look bad. It might not be the best investment to have the super expensive team that could very easily lose in the second round. It's not my money. And I'm also not the one who brags all the time about how much money we make. Like, when there was a report about NBA revenues, and I think the Warriors were third in whatever, whoever like was guessing on it, because we don't know exactly. And I think it was Joe Lacob came out and was like, no, we make more money than the Lakers and Knicks. Like, if you're going to talk that way, well, then you got to spend at a time like this. You have this great opportunity. You have this exception that could be so helpful. You know, maybe it won't be exactly as helpful as you'd want it to be. I don't know exactly who's available, but I guarantee your team will be better next year if you use that exception than if you don't.
Have I told you my single favorite potential use of the Iguodala trade exception?
You have not.
Andre Iguodala.
Oh, yes, yes. I like more. It's not as fun. I like Kelly Oubre.
Yeah. I mean, Oubre would be a useful part of the rotation, and he would help, but also isn't a significant long-term obligation, and they would get bird rights on him, so that would be potentially valuable. And yeah, I mean, that is a really interesting one also because of what would be going back to Phoenix. So I think that the Suns are kind of, especially, and I mean, it's sort of a Wally Pipp situation where, but it's also just where the Phoenix Suns were going beforehand, is that I don't think James Jones anticipates that, and probably not Monty Williams either, that Kelly Oubre is starting on the 2020-21 Suns. I mean, we saw what the Bubble Suns did, and the combination of Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, who really came on, it makes sense. And like, and I'm not saying that they're going to go 8-0, you know, in perpetuity or anything like that, but that means that creates a couple of potential issues for the Suns. I mean, yes, you want to have as much depth, especially at the forward, as you can, but Oubre is an unrestricted free agent after next season. Does he really want to be a backup on a fringe playoff team? Is that what he wants? It's possible. Certainly possible. And I mean, he's made a better career for himself than I've expected at points going back to his time in Washington. But depending on what was going back, like, I don't think the number two pick would be involved in that trade or anything like that. And the other big potential ripple effect for that for Phoenix is, and why I like it is, I don't know if you've heard about this, like, my pie in the sky idea with them is I think Fred VanVleet is the best fit that they can get with Devin Booker, realistically. And that would make it a lot more palatable to make that happen, because then you can, you know, then you have the financial flexibility. I'm not saying, like, give him a full max or anything like that, but VanVleet Booker to me would be nasty.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Like, I'm not sure that there was a fair trade there. Like, I don't know if the Warriors would give up enough. Because the Suns want to win next season, same reason you think that Van Vliet would make a lot of sense there. You know, it's helpful to have those multiple forwards, and if Oubre leaves, Oubre leaves, and, you know, it's not the biggest loss or anything, but just because, like you said, those other forwards stepped up in the bubble, and because they could gain some financial flexibility, like, if I'm the Warriors, that's a real appealing player that I think could help me win, that I'd have a chance to keep, who's young enough to add a lot of energy for a team that I think could use some spark. Like, I think he checks a lot of boxes that the Warriors should want and should be inquiring. Like, if Phoenix wants too much, oh well, like, you don't trade for him. I'm just saying, they might not want too much.
In a different world where he weren't injured so severely, Jeremy Lamb was somebody I had been kind of having in the back of my mind for that potential exception, but now obviously that's totally off the table.
A little too score first for my taste for the Warriors, although, you know, you can use a guy like that, but I don't know if he'd be at the top of my list, but yeah, you're right. Injury takes that off the table.
What other teams are most interesting to you? I mean, there's a lot of angles that are really compelling with this offseason. Teams that have inflection points. I mean, I actually think of the Bucks offseason as less interesting, just because, I mean, it's basically you offer Giannis that, he accepts it or he doesn't, but he's still going to be on your roster because nobody's that insane.
I mean, I guess I find it more interesting. This is an aging roster. Like, what if they just bring it back next year? Do you think they're as good as they were the last couple of years?
No,
me neither. So what are you going to do? Just die the slow death, and Giannis is going to leave? Like, or you're going to hope he's just so loyal to Milwaukee regardless?
I think that they're – so Nate's brought this point up well, and it's just the timing of when Giannis is available. Is that, like, we saw the absolute king's ransoms that the Thunder and Pelicans got for their superstars. The problem now is they're just by matter of circumstance, there aren't teams that have that absolute treasure trove that I think is necessarily available. You could disagree with me if you want to point out a team that does get there. And so I just think that the offers aren't going to be strong enough. I could conceive of a worthwhile Giannis trade if you were very, very confident. But there are worse things in this world than, like, they were the best regular season team in the league, and they lost in the conference finals last year. They lost in the second round to the team that eventually made it to the championship. And, you know, Miami, yes, their record was disappointing, but they were a really good team in the playoffs once they got Goran Dragic to be back, and the development from guys like Tyler Hero and everything else. So I think, unless it were so abundantly clear that he wasn't coming back, and I don't think Giannis is going to say that, but, like, let's say conceptually, he's like, this is my final season with you. It's hard for me to imagine it changing. Other than in that circumstance, I think you roll the dice because he's, you know, you've had two corner, like, absolute dead bang megastars in the history of your franchise in Kareem and Giannis, and I think to an extent you kind of need to do the Oklahoma City and just let it ride because it's the best chance you're ever going to have.
Oh, I agree on Giannis himself, but I'm saying I think you got to do something with the rest of that roster. And I'm saying you want to put your best foot forward. So you got some tools here. You have some tradable players. In theory, you have the ability to pay the luxury tax this year. Like, I'm going to be somewhat aggressive in trying to upgrade this roster. I would have been doing that last year. And, you know, I think Chris Paul is the absolute perfect fit there. Exactly what they need. They seem to differ. But some way or somehow, I think they've got to be very aggressive in upgrading this roster around Giannis.
Yeah, I think that that ties kind of in with the idea of you don't get many bites at this apple. And that was part of why I was so critical of the Bucks offseason last year, like you were, was that I didn't think they went aggressively enough. And I've gone after Denver and a few other teams for this. It's like, you never know how long the good times are going to last. And even if ownership is not willing to spend aggressively all the time, as a practical matter, I understand that. Now, I'm not accepting it because I think that part of the duty of owning an NBA team is spending when your team is good enough to warrant it, like the Bucks obviously were last offseason because they were the best team in the regular season in 18-19. But I think that you're right that they do have this opportunity, and, like, I think a really telltale indicator there is going to be Ersan Ilyasova, because Ilyasova is not worth the $7 million that his non-guaranteed contract is tabbed for. But he could be useful in a potential trade. It's like his contract is not so negative that it's a huge problem. And because Milwaukee doesn't have a ton of expiring salary. And so that potentially, you know, like let's say you need to combine it with something else. It's good to have it for a player who is expiring, because then like let's say George Hill and Ilyasova could be palatable to a different set of teams than like George Hill and Bledsoe, for example.
Yeah, sure. I'm probably trying to hang on to George Hill. He's been a pretty good playoff contributor to me. Bledsoe is the big piece to move. I think Robin Lopez is going to opt in at $5 million. To me, he's another trade candidate. Like,
sure. Yeah, same logic.
Yeah. Sorry, Brooke. Like, you know, we got you guys together for a year, but now we need to have a better team.
And they got to spend part of that year at Disney World. I don't think they could have asked for anything more.
Well, it was very tempting for them, I'm sure, right? They can't enjoy Disney World.
That's true.
But they're right there, yeah. Maybe that's why they lost. Maybe they were too distracted by being so close yet so far.
Yeah, and it is a real shame. So something that I've been thinking about a lot with the Bucks is the challenge that you brought up the idea, like, are they going to be better next year? And so you were talking about it more in terms of the aging curve and that, you know, a lot of guys sort of like the Warriors where it's not a guarantee that as you get older that every year is going to be worse, but the expectation is that that time is not going to make them a better team. And Giannis could still be improving because even though he's incredible, but Bled, Lopez, George Hill, Chris Middleton, you know, all those guys, and they're, you know, DiVincenzo and those guys can grow, but I don't think it'll be by as much. But the other huge challenge for the Bucks, which I don't think, and I blame myself as a part of this, that we collectively are paying attention to, is it's going to be hard for them to retain some of the important talent. I mean, Marvin Williams gave them an element in terms of going smaller, and he retired, so you're not going to bring him back. And then Wes Matthews, I assume that he could that there will be a path he could opt in, or they could re-sign him using non-bird rights or using part of the mid-level exception, whatever happens there. But then, like, kind of, you could argue the best case scenario for the Bucks without something more aggressive is treading water, and that's scary.
Yeah, like I mean they need to get better. Treading water is no good. Treading water, when you made the conference finals, maybe we can have more of a discussion. But when it's And you're right. They lost to the team that went to the NBA Finals. They also got smoked. Like, that was not a close series.
And they were getting worked before Giannis got hurt. Like, this is it is not a circumstance where, you know, like, going back to that Clippers-Blazers series years ago, where it's like the Clippers were ahead in the series, and then everybody on their team got hurt and the Blazers advanced. Like, that is a fundamentally different set of circumstances than what happened to the Bucks. Like, they were getting beat and before Giannis. And they would have had a much higher chance of coming back, but I mean, and they did have some of the disadvantages in terms of not having home court in those early games and everything else, but it still happened.
Yeah, they would have had a much higher chance to come back, because when you have Giannis, you can make many more adjustments, and we know that the Bucks have made a bunch of adjustments and hit all the right buttons there and completely changed the series instead of just playing the same way even with Giannis. Absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds completely accurate to me.
No, they're a team in a tougher spot than I think people realize around Giannis. Like, people understand, oh, Giannis could leave. Like, people get that. But I don't think people quite understand enough of, I'm not saying they're in trouble, because, well, they'd still be pretty good, but expectations have risen, right? We're not just talking about, can you win 50 games? Can you make the playoffs? Can you win a playoff series? Like, as a team trying to actually make noise deep in the playoffs, they're trending the wrong direction, but they do have ways to get better. I don't remember exactly where you were on them last offseason. I know we both had similar trepidation, but my big thing was, okay, you got this draft pick from the Pacers. If you're going to flip it for a player who can help you win the 2020 championship, and you just feel like that's not available right now, okay, right? You're willing to pay the tax later or do something to use that pick later to help you in the 2020 playoffs, okay. They never did. To me, that was the biggest problem.
Yeah, that was incredibly frustrating, and it also could have been, yeah, it might have been more expensive. Like, maybe that was a factor in as well. There are a couple different reasons why it could happen. And
I think the other factor was they just were so fond of their own chemistry that they didn't want to disrupt it. Like, all right, Marvin Williams, he's a guy who fits into who we are. And yes, that matters. But look, you need to have the requisite amount of talent of playoff players, and you need to be able to have your chemistry handle that. And I had enough faith personally in the Bucks' chemistry. I think Giannis is a great leader. I think that team is full of so many guys who are solid pros, who do the right things, who set good examples, who set a good tone. Like, I'm a big believer in their chemistry, maybe even more than they are, because I thought you could have brought in somebody else who doesn't fit quite as cleanly and had them fit it, like buy into the rest of what everybody else is doing because their culture was so strong.
I'm going to give Basketball Reference ages of pertinent bucks for next season. I think this goes back to the original idea that you were talking about. Giannis, 26. Middleton, 29. Bledsoe, 31. Lopez, 32. Wes Matthews, 34. DiVincenzo, 24. George Hill, 34. Kyle Korver, if he's back, 39. Ersan Ilyasova, 33. So yeah, not a lot on the good side of the age curve there. And yeah, maybe DiVincenzo can take a couple of steps forward, but they don't really even have that many young bites of the apple. I mean, Sterling Brown's probably, I think he's probably going to be gone. And DJ Wilson doesn't really have much of a place to be on this team anymore now that they've filled out the center spots. And so they're getting there. And I've had people, you know, I've written a lot about the Bucks over the last 6 months, as most of us have. And I've had people say they could drop a quarter billion on his doorstep and nobody's going to turn that down. And my answer is, yeah, I mean, I think we're absolutely going to see that. Like, maybe not with Giannis, but I do think we'll see it with Giannis, but with other guys. And part of it is just that risk takes on a very different tenor when you are as good as he is. Because, and this is, you know, we talked about the ripple effects of Kevin Durant signing with the Warriors in 16. To me, there are going to be some significant ripple effects, if I were an agent, of Kevin Durant signing with the Brooklyn Nets in 2019. And that is, you can have a catastrophic injury. If you have proven that you are at that level of player, you can have a catastrophic injury immediately before you become a free agent and still get that money. And so are you really risking that much financially to go another year? If Giannis, heaven forbid, like as long as it's not something that like affects his life, if it's an injury that he will recover from, then I can't imagine that there would not be a single team in the league that would offer him a four-year max next offseason.
There's something we don't talk enough about is how the league moving to shorten the maximum length of contracts has changed things.
Yes.
Okay. A four-year contract for somebody coming off a big injury, like if it doesn't work, it's 4 years. It's still a long time, but it's not 6 years like it used to be. It used to be you'd have time to maybe get back on track and get hurt again. I mean, it's so long, and that's for a player leaving. Like 4 years just isn't that long. That really did shift things so much.
It did, and so, I mean, when people have asked me about it, the thing, this gets back to what I was talking about with Victor Oladipo, which is ceding that much control to a team. And so I just rattled through the Bucks' ages. If I were advising Giannis, I'd say, are you willing to commit not necessarily even to the Bucks for those extra 5 years, but also to whatever they want to do with you? Because you lose all of that control in the process. And so even if he wants to stay in Milwaukee, I would tell him not to sign the designated veteran extension.
Oh, I would absolutely also. And maybe it's going to get to the point where he figures that out too. I mean, so many things went against the Bucks here. I mean, number one, losing like they did in the second round, exposing all their long-term problems in the process. Number two, the economic downturn, right? Like, this might not be the right time to lock in, right? You might want to sign a short deal even if you plan to stay, sign a 1+1 or something and then see what the right year is to lock in. And then the other risk for Milwaukee is, even if that's his mindset is, I want to stay in Milwaukee, this is just the financially right way to do it, gives him another couple years to change his mind. Because again, because of these age things, of his supporting cast, I just don't think it's trending in the right direction unless they make some bold moves, including spending on the luxury tax. I wrote about this the other month. Giannis's supporting cast, average age 30.5, and that's in the playoffs, it's weighted for playing time. That's the fourth oldest supporting cast an MVP has ever had.
Wow.
The only ones older, Michael Jordan's Bulls in 1998, obviously they were cooked. Kevin Garnett's Timberwolves in 2004 when they had Sam Cassell, Latrell Sprewell. Like, they never got back to that level. It was the year they made the Western Conference Finals. But they did that because they got Cassell and Sprewell, and they were playing well. On the last time those guys were playing at that high of a level, that wasn't coming back. And LeBron on the 2013 Heat, obviously we saw that, you know, especially with Dwayne Wade, you know, that team was running out of gas a year later. Like, Giannis is so young himself. Is this who he wants to hitch his ride to?
Yeah, and I'm largely of the same mind there. And you also, like, as Giannis, you want that extra year of time just to see how things go. And as you said, like, he could easily go back to the Bucks on a 1+1 or something like that. Like, I'm not saying if he refuses this extension that he's definitely gone, or I'm not advocating for him to leave. That's distinctly something I have never done and will not do at the moment, and probably for a while, because the Bucks are damn good. I won't say I'm not closing that door, obviously. But I think that it is a very real thing that he needs to consider, which is like where is this team going from here? And along those lines, how are they going to get better? Because, you know, they're not going to have good draft picks. They don't have a lot of budding young players. You know, DJ Wilson only has one more year till restricted free agency. DiVincenzo could make steps up, but he looks more like he could, you know, that you're hoping for him as a solid starter, not as a, you know, a star teammate or anything like that. And so if this is the best it's going to be, maybe not in terms of your result in the playoffs, but like overall team quality. And I mean, there are a lot of there were 29 teams that were worse in the regular season, but if that's the high watermark, then and you don't expect to repeat that either in the regular season or we'll see what happens in the playoffs, then the East could get strong again and all that. It's like, well, a lot of other teams can make pitches. I'm not saying those pitches are necessarily better, but they can make them. And so, like, then what Toronto's saying, I mean, they have Toronto, I stand by my statement that they have the best front office and the best coach in the NBA. That's a pretty good sales pitch. They have a good team. You could talk about Dallas. You could talk about Miami, theoretically. And these are legitimately good destinations. They're not the same as like the Warriors team that Kevin Durant joined, but they're worthy of consideration at the bare minimum. And so to me, with Giannis, that's another reason why you don't sign the extension, is just to see where things go, just to get a lay of the land and have control.
I agree 100%. To play devil's advocate, I guess there's maybe a case to the idea of if he knows he wants to be in Milwaukee, if he knows he's happy there, if he likes it there, you know, he can provide some stability by signing the extension. Yeah. He can make it, you know, he can avoid all the questions of where you're going, of his teammates getting asked about, of his teammates talking about, thinking about, like, it might help the Bucks in that sense. Now, I would argue that, well, if you do that, you know, who knows when or how long they'll pay the luxury tax. Like, you can do more by holding that threat that you could leave and forcing ownership's hand more because I don't trust them to spend. Like, you can't just sign it on the promise that they'll spend.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the Damian Lillard theory of the case, which is you're happy where you want to be, and you even if things – it's not going to be everything that you always dreamed it would be, that it's a very good spot, and so you do it. But I think there's a fundamental difference between Lillard and Giannis, and it gets into a through line that you and I have both talked about it in our careers of how the collective bargaining agreement in its various iterations has worked, which is the unintended consequence. And so in this case, with designated veteran extensions and contracts, we've seen players take more agency in recent time, and that matters more at the absolute top. You know, that's those players who have more income assurance, and you could say that the inflection point here is where the max is an artificial limitation. You know, it's like there are some players who, like Otto Porter is probably an example here of like, yeah, he got his maximum, but, well, first of all, it was probably a little bit more, but like, you know, like, even if the max was double the, like, if it was 60% of the cap, he would have gotten about that. But there's this group of players who, you know, it negatively impacts. Also, oftentimes those players have significant other forms of income that can be endorsements or whatever else. And I think that why they're the inflection point is that they don't have the same concept of risk as another player. And so what has happened is, you know, and there are obviously great players that have taken the designated veteran, James Harden being one, Steph Curry being another. But you also see it more often, if it's on the table at all, for the players who, you know, it might end up not being as good. Lillard is probably at the crux there. I mean, he was second team All-NBA for me last year, so that would clearly be worth it. But where is he going moving forward? But then it's the John Wall, the players of that year, ilk, who technically qualify, but you don't necessarily want. And they're the ones who are going to take it if you offer it.
Well, so just this was true in the most explicit sense with Lillard and Giannis, which is where I thought you were going, is Lillard had it. He was eligible for this extension. There was no guarantee he'd ever be eligible again.
Right.
Giannis, we already know, will be eligible either for the extension or in free agency next year. He can get the supermax. Lillard couldn't have necessarily waited. So big difference there.
Yeah, that's a great point.
But it gets to what you're talking about the idea of marginal players. I've asked a lot of players, you know, who are in position to maybe get the Supermax, like, does this mean something to you? And I know it's, like, uncouth to talk about money a little bit. Maybe that's some degree of why I've gotten this answer. But they've all said, you know, it doesn't matter to me. It's not important to me. I don't know if that's 100% true or not. I don't know. Like, have you ever heard a player say this was important to him? And the guy, one of the guys I really want to ask about this after the fact is ask Damian Lillard, like, you know, if the Supermax didn't exist, do you see your career having gone differently? Like, do you think if you could only get a smaller extension from the Trailblazers for the regular max, you wouldn't have signed it if that's all that existed? Like, did this swing things? Because the whole point of it was supposed to swing it for guys to either stay with their team or at least let their team know in advance. I don't know how many players it's swinging it for.
Yeah, that could very well be the case. And we can go wherever you want to go, but the last thing I want to talk about, the line in the sand, kind of, if you want to call it that, that I'm going to be most interested in for this 2020 offseason is extensions. So we talked about Oladipo a little bit earlier, but there are guys at a lot of different levels here, like Donovan Mitchell, Gary Trent Jr., who's only eligible for the lower one because he was a second round pick, and OG Ananobi is kind of a different case because of the Raptors situation. But, like, how risk-averse are these players? What kind of offers does it seem like are on the table? Do we see guys, because of, like, the downturn and everything, take a lot less? Because generally, I mean, you've been a great negotiator of these extension contracts for years. Like, you have more experience in the abstract in this than almost anybody. And but there are also a lot of veteran extension candidates that are really challenging too. And so, and a lot of players who are extension eligible, and maybe if they're being more pragmatic about where their career is going, like, you might want to lock up the money now and could get in there. And so I'm just absolutely fascinated to see what deals happen, what deals don't, and what are the terms.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll see some, like, Iguodala with the Heat, where it was, okay, just one extra year. Sure. Like, it's not a huge
investment
either side. Yeah. Yeah. But I also just think, as a great way to put it, the siren song of 2021 free agency, like, I think teams are going to be cautious. Like, it's always fun to imagine that you're going to be the team that's going to land this star free agent and transform your franchise. And I think teams will be hesitant to do anything to take that off the table.
There is another big reason, and this is another part of the piece when it comes out that is it's the kind of the third reason why, you know, like, I'll go through that. We didn't talk about the second one, but it's in the piece. Is it's also a great cover for teams that want to save money this year, and there will be some very real financial straits that will be happening, and also teams that just don't want to make those long term commitments right now, and if they say, oh, we're so interested in what's coming, and they can sell the fan base on the future and go where it's going. And then at that point, if it ends up not happening, people aren't going to go back and say, oh, you could have signed player X for the mid-level exception for 2 years and you didn't. It's only people like us that do that. And, like, look at those kind of more narrow opportunity costs. And so I am imagining in certain circumstances that 2021 can be a stalking horse kind of for other motivations, because it's more palatable to talk about than the other motivations.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense for not contending teams. Like, I think with the Mavericks after their championship, I think it was pretty widespread people talking about, oh, you know, you didn't re-sign any of these guys because you wanted to make a splash in free agency and never did. And, you know, you really blew your chance to stay in title contention. I don't know if that's a fair argument. It was also somewhat an older team. Like, I don't know if it could have stayed on that level. But I do think once you get that far, people will criticize you for it.
Yeah, that's true. And Dallas, again, in this time, could end up being a team that really matters for it, because they, you know, like, so my idea for Dallas has been, depending on who, you know, and again, it's always who's available, what offers are on the table, all that kind of fun stuff. But, like, I actually think they could benefit from rolling the dice. And if the right player wants to take the MLE for them for multiple years, you do that. And then you just think the law of the universe in the NBA is, if you have to clear money, you can. Like, there are various examples of this in the past. I mean, you could go to the Heat with Jimmy Butler. You could go to, which that went through, like, three iterations before it actually ended up happening. The Warriors for KD, some of the stuff with LeBron in Cleveland that time, and Anthony Davis going to the Lakers. You know, like, you can move heaven and earth to get there. And if it, and especially because the Mavericks can't sign somebody for more than like $9-10 million a year. Like, it is impossible for them to do so. So I think that some of those teams, I think, should roll those dice, but it is a challenging thing. And like, and I think Miami's probably going to be the most zealous on this approach, partially because of the bird rights that they wield. So like Miami, they have the capacity to just give Goran Dragic, potentially Jay Crowder if he wants it, just a bunch of money for next season, and then just no guaranteed money after that. And it kind of sounds like that's where they're going to go, which is totally fine.
Yeah, so here's my somewhat counter to the idea it's always easy to move money if you have to, especially for, so one, for Dallas, they've already got Dwight Powell looking like a not great contract.
Yes.
So you already got the one you got to move. Do you want to have risk a second one you might have to move? And here's the other thing. We don't know how often it comes up that a free agent would be interested in a team, but kind of scopes out, okay, well, to open the cap space, yeah, I know you could make a move, but what would you have to give up? Like, oh, well, you're going to be down those assets because you have to give up that to open space for me. Like, that's not quite as appealing. And so they don't sign there. We don't really hear about those cases. Now, I do think you're right. I do think a lot of times free agents don't really think on that level. They think about, yay, this is a team I want to join. These are the main pieces that they have, and that's what I want to be a part of. You know, whether that could be coach, ownership, city location, key players on the team who definitely aren't getting moved. Like, a lot goes into it. But I bet at least sometimes on the margins there's a player who would have gone to a team if they didn't have to surrender an extra first rounder or a couple even first rounders to clear cap space. And they say, man, we're going to be kind of locked in. And yeah, that doesn't look quite as appealing as my second best option.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Anything else that you're thinking about, looking forward to, that you want to talk about?
I mean, I'm just curious, of these teams with cap space, how quickly do they want to win? I think that's going to dictate so much of how this offseason goes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Detroit and Charlotte, like, what are they going to do?
Well, and New York.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Atlanta. I mean, all of them are the types of teams that you can very easily see saying, we want to be better sooner. We're not going to be patient. Right or wrong. I mean, it depends on what's on the table there, whether that's a good plan or not. But or you could potentially see them all remaining pretty patient. And that's going to swing so much of how this offseason goes. But only so much, because it's beyond like Anthony Davis, Brandon Ingram, who are going to be staying with their current teams on big contracts. Like, not the biggest free agent class, not like a landscape shifting thing.
Yeah. As much as I love Christian Wood, that isn't really what he is.
Maybe. Christian Wood has performed well in every role he's ever had as a professional.
That's true.
Minor league, NBA, several teams.
Oh, like, I've got one other angle on this briefly. Is there's this collection of players, Ibaka and Gasol are probably the best example, who have made a lot of money in their careers and are free agents. And basically, what do they want? I mean, Ibaka could easily go back to the Raptors on a 1-year deal. Gasol could do the same. Gasol might end up being in Europe for a year or the rest of his career. And, you know, those type of guys, and Gallinari too, like, basically none of them are going to get exactly what they want. So what piece of this do they sacrifice?
Yeah, it's like the exact parallel of these teams with cap space. You know, there's not this perfect young player who fits into exactly what you're doing, who you can go sign, except for maybe Christian Wood. Like, he's the one who maybe. But otherwise, no. Like, are you going to get an older player and maybe lower your ceiling down the road a little bit and try and raise your floor? No, it's the exact, that's a great point with these players, and it's gonna come down to what each of them wants, and that's so tough to tell from the outside because there are all kinds of smoke screens and they don't always telegraph it, and it comes down to an inflection point somewhere, right? Like, the Hawks might want to accelerate their rebuild. They might really be about that. And then it comes down to it, and no good free agents are interested in them unless they're way, way overpaying. The Hawks say, yeah, it's not worth it. Even though this is generally what we want, it's just not quite worth it. So we'll stick with a patient approach. I mean, who knows where those exact inflection points are?
Right. And which players are going to attempt it? Because I think we'll see a lot of guys, you know, pick up their player options and take themselves out of the pool. That would actually be my favorite crazy thing that could happen, would be like if Gordon Hayward opts out, or like one of those like really weird ones, and you're like, oh, what's on the table?
Like Al Horford last year.
Yeah. And so I'm very interested in where those, like, because I think there will be something like that. I don't know exactly what it will be. And also, I think so one last one, because you and I haven't talked about this, is internal versus external leverage in a few specific cases. So like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Davis Bertans are probably the two best of this year. Joe Harris. Sorry, I can't forget him. He's the other big one, which is, like actually Harris is better than Bertans for this, which is their teams can't replace them, and they matter. They make their teams better, and their teams have lofty expectations. In the Lakers' case, they actually already did it. So, but it's hard to see exactly where, like, so if KCP is asking for, let's say, $15 million a year, maybe even higher than that.
What's Danny Green's salary?
Yeah.
I have a hunch that'll come up in negotiations.
Yeah, exactly. And for Joe Harris, it's like, you know, he can throw out a number. But if nobody else who has, like, has money is really that interested in you, and maybe I think this is why the Hawks are going to be particularly relevant, especially if they want to get better. But, like, basically, how much can those guys squeeze? And that's why this is the one, why the KCP one is more interesting to me, is because the last time the Lakers got squeezed, Rob Pelinka gave up everything. And it worked out reasonably well for the Lakers. They won the championship and everything else. So he has a negotiation where it's like the player has a lot of leverage, doesn't have everything in the world. Where do the terms end up?
Yeah. I mean, I throw Marcus Morris in there as one more. Sure. Montrezl Harrell. You know, there are going to be plenty of others. Yeah, it's interesting because we're getting back toward normal, right? It used to be normal that we could say who the teams were with cap space rather than say the teams that didn't have cap space. And when that happens, more often, like, yeah, sometimes free agents have to press their internal leverage. And KCP has an agent who, this is what he does. Like, this is his playbook. For better or worse, and it's often for better, he's going to press that internal leverage. And he'll wait until he gets the contract he wants from the Lakers. Maybe if there's something else out there, he could jump at that. But if not, he will press the Lakers on it, and it's going to be who blinks. And I just have a hunch that the Lakers are not going to want to play hardball with LeBron James's agent.
I would agree. Well, thank you so much for taking time. Pleasure as always.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Dan Feldman for taking the time to come on. You can read his work at NBC's Pro Basketball Talk, probasketballtalk.nbcsports.com. And of course, you can follow him on Twitter at Dan Feldman, NBA, DanFeldman, NBA. Love having him on, and love talking to Dan because he helps me get my mind around the offseason, which is a really challenging one in certain respects this year. Like, part of me is like, oh, it's going to be really tame. It's going to be kind of quiet. But then you also see, as we talked about, the potential for larger scale change, like if teams really want to push in that direction. And I'm still trying to piece together, you know, how I feel about every team. Also, if you want to listen to that, Nate and I are doing that on Dunked on Prime. We're going through every team's, you know, we're doing offseason previews. And of course, my written work at The Athletic, I've done all 30 as well. But really kind of bridging those gaps and doing the short term and the long term. And especially now that just about all the coaching situations are settled, getting a little bit of a better idea of that. If you want to support the show, there are a lot of ways you can do it. You can subscribe and download every episode, whatever podcast player you use, whether that's Spotify or Apple, anything. It's really appreciated. Also, word of mouth, very useful way for other people to find the show, single episode, or if you like, if you think somebody's going to like the whole series, then that's great. And of course, leaving a review in the podcast player of your choosing. That can be a big help as well. Again, helping people find the show. If you have any feedback on Real GM Radio, good, bad, or indifferent, Danny LaRue, NBA@gmail.com is the way to reach me. Twitter is too ephemeral. But if you send it there, it goes to a dedicated spot within my inbox and I will read it. I will try to respond. I'm not the greatest at that, but I read everything end of the day. It's just like, it's a habit for me. And that's how I can promise that if you send it, I will read it because I don't want to waste your time. We will be back next week. I'm lining up a guest. I think I know who it's going to be and I'm pretty excited about it. But I can't make any promises. You guys know my policy here. I don't do that until it is in the books. But lots going on right now, and hopefully you can check out my work. Dunked on Prime, still going on strong. The Athletic, all my written work, and now I get to branch into non-off-season preview work. I actually started work on 3 separate pieces over the last 4 days, and as long as I can get myself to finishing those in the next little bit, then those will all be out as well. So thank you so much for listening. Take care, and make it a great day.